presented by DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
So I talked to Mike Griffith on yesterday's show about my belief that when it comes to changes for the Georgia offense, I believe they'll be more significant than not, that we should see a pretty big evolution from Georgia on the field this season. There are a couple of high-profile examples of maybe folks who are not quite saying that as much as maybe I am, so I'll at least entertain the possibility that maybe I was wrong on that. I don't like to admit that, but we'll just have the debate coming up a little bit later on in the show and invite you to kind of weigh in on that a little bit, too. Before we get to that, really fun off the top of the program, because it would seem that, at least according to what Jeff Sintel, our Dog Nation recruiting insider, said yesterday on Before the Hedges presented by Kroger, that storyline that kind of won't die, that sort of takes those twists and turns. If you're like me, you kind of grew up in the 80s and that sort of slasher movie era, you know, like Michael Myers, Jason Voorhees, those guys that you think you got them and they're dead, and all of a sudden they kind of resurrect themselves and they're back doing things again. You know, that's what this Zach Evans story has sort of felt like. It's over. No, it's not. Now it's over. No, it's not. It's going this way, and now it's going a different way. And as I've said the entire time, admittedly, selfishly, I'd love to see Evans at Georgia because I think he's a top-flight prospect, and I'll certainly acknowledge that there are some off-field concerns, and you got to take those at least somewhat seriously, especially if you're the one in charge of leading the program. This isn't fantasy football where you just put talented players together. You do have to give some thought to how chemistry meshes. I get all of that. And yet, with that said, I'm still pretty clear on this, that if Zach Evans is eligible, if Zach Evans is willing and able to be at Georgia, I'd give him a shot because I do think he's pretty impressive from a talent standpoint. And I do think the college regimen that a school like Georgia can provide can be a game changer for a lot of people, no pun intended. I think it can put you on a path towards success that you otherwise wouldn't have found if you didn't have that discipline instilled into you. I think college is a time for growth and development. That's true for me, kind of a non-athlete when I was going to college, and it can be true for a guy like Zach Evans, a truly elite athlete. But even beyond that, would I take him at Georgia or not? Recruiting is just sort of like a soap opera for guys, right? And gals enjoy it too. But it's just kind of one of those things where it's just entertaining. I don't know how else to say it. You know, like the hat shows, all the different things that happen along the way. Some of it predictable, some of it totally unpredictable. With Evans, more unpredictable than not. I'm just kind of entertained by it all. It keeps me, it's just nice diversion from some of the real problems of life. And Evans has certainly provided no shortage of entertainment throughout this process. And maybe like any good drama, a really good plot twist at the end. We thought Evans was kind of over and done because of what had been reported about Georgia releasing him from his letter of intent, which has this like really serious sounding tone. But maybe it's not quite done yet, as explained by Jeff Sintel, our Dog Nation recruiting insider, on Before the Hedges presented by Kroger yesterday. Here is a little bit from Jeff.
It's the recruiting that will not end. It's the recruiting story. This is the Lazarus recruit of the 2020 cycle. I mean, can we call it the crazy train of 2020 recruiting? Just all over the place, the zigs, the zags. I do think there's still something there. Now, you're going to want and wish and hope for some finality there. It's not going to happen. He can't sign anything. Maybe he can commit around February the 5th. Maybe he could be that Kirby Smart big boom everybody wants to see on National Signing Day. I don't think that's going to happen. I think you're just going to watch and wait. And there'll probably be at least 7 more plot twists here.
So first of all, a practical point. As Jeff said, there may be a million plot twists before this is all said and done, and maybe one of those twists back in the direction of Evans ending up at Georgia. But from a practical standpoint, it's important to point out, if he does come back to Georgia, I'm not quite sure how we'll ever know, because it's not as if, you know, at this point in time, Georgia is likely to sort of tweet out the image of signed Evans and that kind of, you know, UGA edit. Come summer practice, I guess one day one of the reporters will have a pair of binoculars out there and just sort of notice him standing there. That may be all it ends up being. I'm sure he'll be spotted on campus if it indeed goes down sometime before that. But my point is, I'm not sure what I could learn on National Signing Day that would make me feel like, oh, look at this. Evans really is coming to Georgia. Just given how many twists and turns there might be. Now, there are still, I guess, other, you know, potential suitors in play here. And, you know, listen, I don't even know that it's, it may even still be like only remote possibility, only a small chance, remote possibility that ends up at Georgia. You know, Jeff kind of addressed some of those other rumors that might be out there, too. Here's a little bit more from Jeff on this subject.
You see the internet headlines. He's supposed to visit Florida last on an official. Florida State's now supposedly going to get an official. He was at Ole Miss. He was at LSU. Is Texas A&M? Is Texas A&M out? Is Georgia in and Georgia out? I have a lot of people that tell me a lot of things, and maybe the most responsible thing I can say is just I want you to treat this Zach Evans recruitment for the rest of the way like that tooth you put underneath your pillow.
So, listen, I'm kind of fine with that. I think the analogy that Jeff means there at the end is just kind of be willing to wait and see how all this plays out. And I got to tell you, I'm fine with that. I mean, admittedly, as a fan, I'd like for Georgia to get Evans. And admittedly, as an analyst, I guess I still sort of view it as more likely than not that won't be the case just for how weird all of this has been. But I'm just sort of okay with seeing how this goes. As I said before, I'm actually entertained by this. I think it's kind of, I mean, these are real people, real lives, and maybe in some cases some serious circumstances at stake. But for the most part, I kind of think it's funny. I think it's funny that, you know, he's kept people guessing as much as he has. And I think it's kind of funny that from one day to the next, you sort of never know where he's going to go next or never know how it's going to work out. I just think it's kind of entertaining, and I'm happy to be entertained by this process. Admittedly, I don't want him to go to a place like Florida, although, as I said before, if he does go there, Dan Mullen's proven he doesn't know how to use a running back anyway, so it may not end up being that big of a deal one way or another there. But as Jeff kind of cautions you to do, I'm sort of willing to do that. Let's just see where it goes. Let's just kind of be entertained by the whole process. And for me, that's exactly what the recruiting stuff and storylines are supposed to be about anyway. But wait, that's not all, because another name came up yesterday on our program that has not been talked about for a while. South Carolina commit, but as of yet to sign. Going to do that in February. He made his pledge back during December, but will sign in February. That's the five-star defensive lineman Jordan Burch. Now, Burch's drama kind of pales in comparison to what Evans has been through, but there has been a lot of guessing games when it came to Burch as well before he made that public pledge to the Gamecocks. Not quite done as of yet with Burch. Here's what Jeff said about that, including a nice provocative question there at the end. More from Jeff Sintel.
I'll say we've spoken ad nauseum about Jordan Burch, but all you can look at now is, remember how he said that South Carolina was one, LSU was two, Clemson was three, Georgia was four? Well, Dave Aranda, which was a great pull to Burch for LSU, he's now the head coach at Baylor. I think that the fact about Clemson, do they have room? Do they not have room? Maybe puts Georgia right there now as a challenger still down the stretch with South Carolina. That'll be one to monitor. And the only thought I'll add to you to engage some discussion, Brandon, if I can give you Jordan Burch on the Georgia campus on August the 1st, or I can give you Zachary Evans on the Georgia campus on August the 1st, who are you taking and why?
I think it's a great question that Jeff asked yesterday on Before the Hedges, presented by Kroger. You can go to like Dog Nation on Facebook, the Dog Nation YouTube page, watch the full show for yourself. YouTube may be the place you enjoy that the most. I think it's a really provocative question. My answer would be Evans. I do think that Georgia has a need for another elite running back, and that's not because I don't think that Kendall Milton's a sensational prospect. I obviously do. And it's not that I don't think guys like Zamir White and James Cook potentially have really bright futures come breakout seasons for them maybe here in 2020. That could certainly be a possibility. There's a lot to like about Kenny McIntosh as well. But I think that Georgia still has a spot open for another elite back, and obviously I believe that Evans has the chance to be that. So if you give me my choice between Evans or Burch, and this is sort of a fictitious, hypothetical type conversation, if you give me my choice on that, I will take Evans over Burch. But I'll say the same thing about Burch that I said about Evans before. It may be only a remote possibility that Georgia could ever get back involved in a guy like this, because the fact of the matter is, as has been reported at DogNation.com, there were a lot of schools ahead of Georgia when Burch made his initial pledge to South Carolina back in December. But I'm sort of okay with that, too. Look, as it stands right now, Georgia has already put together an elite class. I think only Clemson has more five stars on the composite from 24/7 Sports than Georgia does, and that's only by a single recruit. Georgia, I think, has five. Clemson has six. Georgia has already put together an elite class. And maybe with a little bit of room left, some time to add maybe another elite name, or maybe no more elite names. Maybe the class in terms of the big, bold print above the fold names, maybe that's already done. Well, if that's the case, then Georgia's already done well. But as long as there's still time on the recruiting calendar, and there is ahead of February, and as long as there are still open names on the board, in at least some form or fashion there kind of is, then let's just watch this and see where it goes. Maybe, just maybe, Georgia might be able to pull a surprise before it's all said and done. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans today. Presented by Merriweather and Tharp. Good to have you with us, no matter how you get to us, live on video, 10 a.m., Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Radio Noon, on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, or as a podcast. Wherever you find them, Apple, Google, the worldfamousdognation.com. Just really glad to have you with us here today. And as I said before, really appreciate our friends at Merriweather and Tharp making it all possible. Now, I realize that when it comes to a subject like divorce, a subject that Merriweather and Tharp specializes in, it can be a tough thing to talk about. People really don't want to talk about it. And the more likely it is that you might be dealing with it, sometimes the less likely it is that you want to talk about it at all. But sometimes for some of you, unfortunately, it is going to be a fact that you can no longer ignore. And if you find yourself in that situation, my advice to you would be make sure you have a strong advocate on your side. And the strength of Merriweather and Tharp comes from the fact that they have dealt with situations like this thousands and thousands of times before. They collect institutional knowledge and memory over the course of that time, and they can put that to work for you. Because let's face it, you may be feeling a situation right now where it seems broken and that you can never feel whole again, and you can never put your family back together again, or you can never put your finances back together again. Merriweather and Tharp can show you a path towards that. They are your source for Georgia divorce. You can find them online at theatlantadivorceteam.com. That's theatlantadivorceteam.com. Let them put you on a path towards feeling better. Again, they can do that if you find yourself in that tough situation, potentially facing a divorce. All right, coming up in just a couple of minutes, we have a special guest, a guy that I like, Bud Elliott. He's been a guest on our show before. You kind of know him from SB Nation. He's covered Florida State for Tomahawk Nation. He works now for kind of a little bit of a new creation called the Banner Society. He's a good college football writer. He knows recruiting really well. He also knows the Seminoles well, so we're going to talk to him about Trey McKitty. He's seen Jamie Newman. We'll talk a little bit about that. We'll just kind of cover all of those bases with Bud Elliott here coming up in just a little bit. Before that, I do want to go around the doghouse, and I want to play a couple audio clips from Brock Vandegrift. Once again, interview from Before the Hedges presented by Kroger yesterday. You got to really check this out. This was a great addition to the program. And Vandegrift said a couple of things that I thought were really interesting. First of all, in terms of how it was that he came to be in George's class and, you know, what the ultimate factor was. And, you know, we've always kind of had this belief around here of, you know, that Georgia is such a deep, talent-rich state that if you can play that up, if you can play, you know, I loved what D'Angelo Gibbs, I think it was his mom, who said when he committed to Georgia, the Under Armour All-American game a few years ago, keeping those dogs at home, baby. You know, when you can keep those dogs at home, I think some good things happen. Not to say that you can't ever nationally recruit, and not to say sometimes the best fit for Georgia won't be someone outside the state of Georgia, but we love the idea, if I can borrow the phrase again, of keeping those dogs at home. And in the case of Brock Vandegrift, staying a little closer to home was apparently something that over the course of the holiday season became really important to him. Here is what he told Jeff Sintel about that.
And that was probably the main thing. I'd been thinking about other options closer to home for probably 2 or 3 months going into like December, and I prayed about it and I talked about it with my family. But then when we were at the dinner table, every family member in Alabama, the great grandparents, aunts, uncles, stuff like that. And I don't know how we got to talking about it. I didn't say anything about it. I guess it's just the Lord's timing. But someone was like, man, Oklahoma's far away. And I was like, it is. And I couldn't go to sleep that night. I was thinking about it, and I was like, I got to do something about this. I was like, I got to stay closer to home so that the people I love can be able to watch me and I can still go hunt in Alabama on the weekends and stuff like that.
Listen, I'd love no more than for the idea to be kind of put out there that there is no greater honor than for an elite high school player in the state of Georgia to get a chance to represent UGA in Athens. I love the idea of that, and I think that Vandegrift could help kind of usher that in. You know, I hate that he felt conflicted, but the fact that conflict led to a situation where he's going to get a chance to be closer to his family, I think ultimately all is well that ends well. Maybe the most interesting thing, though, that Vandegrift got into with the interview with Jeff Sintel, and you can see just that interview if you want to go to, like, say, to the Dog Nation YouTube page, you can watch the full interview there, in terms of how he thinks he'll fit into the Georgia offense. Admittedly, his old school Oklahoma, he did like what Lincoln Riley was doing, but he addresses how Georgia might look in kind of the new Todd Monken, Buster Faulkner era. This is interesting from Vandegrift, maybe a little different answer than I would have expected from him. Here is Brock Vandegrift again.
We're kind of sacrificing the best fit for me just for some other things that are priorities now.
Do you look at Georgia a little bit differently, that they're trying to move away from their their normal physical pound at Indy a little bit?
I mean, I think someone asked me that the other day, and would they change the offense or something? I was like, they're never going to change the offense. They have a million plays, and they only run what their players are comfortable with and what they're going to do the best with. Because, I mean, if you have the dang Darnell Washington out there, like, you're not going to have him blocking every play when he can go for six every other play. So, I mean, I think they're going to run with what they're comfortable with and what their players are going to do well with.
So, listen, you know, as I said before, off the top of the program, if I had to guess, I do think some pretty significant changes are coming to the UGA offense, and I think they're going to be in changes that someone like Brock Vandegrift can thrive in. I mean, ultimately, I think I understand what he's saying there, but later on in today's show, I'm actually going to compare what Vandegrift said there to what someone else has said about the Georgia offense and how it may look here this upcoming season. Admittedly, this was stated before the Monken hire took place, and I think we'll just kind of have that conversation of, you know, how much of the old Georgia will still be present this upcoming season, and how much of this will really be kind of a new era kind of ushered in by Todd Monken. I think this is an important conversation as we kind of make our predictions about what Georgia will look like on the field this upcoming season. And I think for someone like Vandegrift, it's also a real crucial storyline there as well. So we'll do a lot of that coming up. It's Dog Nation Daily presented by Merriweather and Tharp today. Before that, though, as I said before, always a great guest to have on. Terrific perspective when it comes to recruiting and everything happening around college football. Let's talk to Bud Elliott right now. And anytime we have a chance to have on Bud Elliott, always a real thrill for me, a guy that I think that follows the recruiting industry very, very closely. And obviously today, also with his expertise around Florida State, helpful too, given the fact that the Dogs have a former Knoll on the roster this upcoming season. You can read him as a part of the Banner Society and a lot of other things that I'm sure Bud will tell us about over the course of our time here today. Bud, we appreciate you spending a few minutes with us and hope you're doing well.
Hey, guys. Good morning.
Let me start with this. Obviously, you know the Knolls really well. Georgia's got a Knoll coming in at tight end in Trey McKitty for this upcoming season. The best I can tell, it seems like Florida State did a pretty good job of using him, and it seems like he's a pretty athletic tight end. But I'm sure you're aware that, or you may or may not be aware, you know, this is a real position of need for Georgia this upcoming season. Georgia utilized a transfer tight end, Eli Wolf, last year from Tennessee. How would you project how McKitty may kind of fit into the situation here at Georgia? And as someone who kind of watched him closely there at Florida State, what can you tell us a little bit about him for Georgia fans who are only now acquainting themselves with him?
Sure, Brandon. Well, first of all, McKitty's a really good kid. You know, he's a guy who, you know, he has his degree. He never, you know, was causing any kind of off-field problems. So they're getting a person who I think improves their locker room. You know, he understands how to practice, and I think that's really good as well. You know, physically, he looks like a million bucks. I mean, the guy is ripped, and he doesn't skip the weight room. He came in to Florida State out of IMG Academy as a little bit more of sort of, you know, like an offset tight end, but has shown, you know, a little more comfort playing with his hand in the dirt in recent seasons than he did when he came in, which is pretty natural. As far as tight end instincts, I think they're like okay, but not great. You know, he's always been a little bit better athlete than he is a player. You know, and one of the issues there is I don't know if you want to say he fights the football or he just struggles to pick it up early in the release of the ball, but you know, oftentimes that he lets the ball get into his chest, and it looks like he's late picking up the ball.
Okay.
And so that's led to a number of drops or just balls hitting off his, you know, his chest plate and falling to the ground for an incomplete. That's really kind of the one knock on him. That and having the comfort level and understanding of where to settle down in a zone. If you get him the ball in his hands, though, he's a guy who really does have some plus run after the catch ability, especially by tight end standards. He's a good player, and I would expect him to start for Georgia, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think that he would have a very good chance of being able to do that. And obviously the guy that is going to be throwing the football, at least we presume, is Jamie Newman, who was at Wake Forest. In your time following the ACC, did Newman stand out to you much? I mean, obviously Georgia's going to put a lot of hopes on him, and it's a weird transition after having Jake Fromm the last 3 years to going to a player that most UGA fans probably hadn't heard of before a couple of weeks ago. I mean, did Newman, while he was at Winston-Salem, do much to stand out to you? Did you notice the athleticism optimism that some folks are trying to sell with him? You know, any thoughts on Newman at all?
Yeah, but Brandon, he's huge, and for his size, like very athletic. I mean, he looks like Dante Culpepper running around. You know, he's really, really athletic. He does have a strong arm. I think the real question here is, Georgia's going to have a really good defense, right? At least from my depth charts coming back. And their offensive line is talented but pretty green, if I have the read on that correctly.
Yep.
You know, having a mobile quarterback who you actually use in the run game, that creates that extra gap and extra blocker, and those angles really help a young offensive line. So, to me, the question is going to be, like, especially in your bigger games, how willing is Georgia going to be to change up its offense a little bit and become an attack that features more QB run? Not that he can't throw, but, like, to me, that's an ideal situation. Not necessarily having to do it every game, but in your bigger games, you know, being able to threaten the defense with the quarterback's legs. Wake Forest ran a really unique system, and it gave teams fits. I don't know how much your listenership has watched Wake Forest, but they do a lot of the RPO game, and they hold the mesh point for literally like a one Mississippi, two Mississippi count. I mean, it's a long, long protracted mesh point in which the quarterback and running back were both actually kind of walking towards the line of scrimmage, playing a game of chicken with the backer or whomever they're reading. To see if that person would commit to the run or hang back. It's going to be a very different system for him, and I'm fascinated to see how Georgia changes what it does to fit Newman.
Yeah, my thought on this is, and I was talking about this a little bit before you joined us, just given the fact that I think of Todd Monken as someone with some credentials, you know, play caller for the Tampa Bay Bucs, former head coach. It seems like to me that he would be the kind of, and we're obviously all guessing on this because only Kirby Smart knows this for sure, but it seems like to me Monken is the kind of guy who has the gravitas that ought to be able to convince Smart to do things a little bit differently, whereas, you know, Jim Chaney and James Coley were guys who were clearly working, you know, for Smart, and they were always going to have to answer to him. You know, Monken, I would assume, had other job opportunities, a guy that could have chosen other places to go. It seems like he would have only come here if he knew he was going to have a chance to make a name for himself. I'm someone who believes that Georgia does need to make some changes, and I thought it was going to take a pretty, I guess, a significant presence to be able to kind of usher that in. I think Monken sort of has the look of someone who might be able to convince Smart to do things a little bit differently. And so I think a lot of the people who are listening to us right now probably hope that's true, whether it be using Newman right now or just a philosophy that goes in place over the course of the next couple of years, that Georgia really will do things a little bit differently offensively. Because when you look at the teams who are populating the college football playoff, it seems to be that that's kind of the only way you're going to really win at the highest level right now.
Yeah, I think that's true. And look, you can win it with a pocket passing quarterback. I mean, Burrow has some athleticism, but he wasn't really killing defenses with his legs unless they forgot about him. I'm just thinking, okay, Newman is from such a heavy, you know, read option type system there. Georgia has a green offensive line. Like, if they try to go very pro-style passing attack, and I know they have some promising young receivers, is this offensive line in their better games going to be equipped to let him drop back 40 times? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. Well, I guess we'll see. I kind of like your opinion on that. Well, like, you know, why you got me on here? Are you expecting a big drop off there, or?
I think a lot of this depends on some. You're talking about the offensive line. I think a lot of this depends on what they do with their offensive tackles. You know, does a guy like Broderick Jones, does he sign in February? Can he be like what Andrew Thomas was in 2017, a summer arriving freshman who's able to become a starter? Back then, you know, Thomas.
So I don't think so.
Okay.
I saw Andrew Thomas. In fact, in that clip that I had tweeted out of the ball that Tua threw to beat Georgia, I had an identical clip from the Army All-American Bowl practices. I don't know if you remember this. It was like 4 years ago.
Okay.
Thomas dominated that week.
Uh-huh.
I like Broderick Jones' athleticism just off the charts, but he, personally, I mean, I don't think he's as refined as Andrew was as a player at the same age. Like, Thomas just felt like, man, his balance was just so good. He almost never, like, he just didn't overextend himself. He made you run the arc on him, and he'd run you by the quarterback. He was really impressive. I like Roger Jones a ton, but I don't know, especially because he's very light right now. He's actually playing basketball.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's probably like 270-something.
Yeah, that's a good point. The other thing on the other side is, you know, Jamari Salyer, I know you followed him as a recruit, was kind of thought of as an interior lineman back then. It seems like they're going to experiment with him at a tackle spot, which, you know, all indications are during practices and obviously during the Sugar Bowl that he seemed to kind of do well with that. But that's a little bit different starting spot for him in 2020 than I think you assumed he would be when he first came into Georgia. So I think ultimately the story for the Georgia offensive line this upcoming season kind of comes down to, you know, can you find competent tackles? And there are other tackles in the program that have a chance to emerge, but I think you probably feel pretty good about the interior offensive line competition, especially with Ben Cleveland, you know, kind of coming back. But the competition there for those tackles, I think, is the big unknown right now, just given the fact that, you know, Thomas and Wilson were such bookends for Georgia there last year, and really Thomas is one of the greats that Georgia's had in a number of years there in that spot. It stands to reason it'd be tough to replace them, but that's where it really kind of comes down to, is what is Georgia going to do with those two tackle spots?
I think it makes a ton of sense. And Jamari, I don't think he's an NFL tackle, but his feet are good enough to where I think he could easily play tackle in college and play it at a high level. That guy, just the body control and the feet for that size were special. He was probably, what, 6'3", 6'3 and a half?
Yes,
He's not one of these 6'4", 6'5 types, at least not at the time I last saw him. That could work. Okay.
Let me squeeze
me on this here a little bit.
Well, there you go. Listen, a lot for Georgia will depend on that one way or another. Let me squeeze in one more thing while I have you. We were talking before you joined us. I'm entertained by the Zach Evans saga. I don't know how it's going to end. It may only still be a remote possibility that ends up at Georgia. And for a guy that's had some issues off the field, it's not a given that he'll flourish in the college environment wherever he does end up. But I'm still kind of entertained by this process. As someone who follows recruiting storylines, what have you thought about the way it's kind of played out with Zach Evans? And kind of any, I hate to ask you about a prediction, but any sort of theory about how this may play out going forward for a guy that a lot of people I think would like to have, but in terms of how he fits and where it's going to go next, maybe it's just sort of difficult to decipher at the moment.
It really is. Look, first and foremost, he's a no doubt special back. I mean, like, he would have been one of the most talented backs Georgia had signed in a little while, especially, you know, post Zeus with the ACL tear. For them to turn him down, as I think we're all in agreement that they didn't turn the letter in. That says something about their concerns, in my opinion, about character, and also, like, you have to balance out your locker room, okay? You can't have too many guys who are knuckleheads, to use kind of a kind term. Mm-hmm. You have to make sure, like, you can pick a couple, and you should pick a couple. I wonder if that doesn't signal Georgia having a greater concern about the composition of its existing locker room plus this class that it was already bringing in, right? I mean, talking to some of those guys who I know follow Georgia closely, they're like, yeah, that could tip the balance in a negative way. And, you know, you gotta make sure you're mindful of that. I don't know where he's going to go. A lot of it's probably going to be follow the visits for the final weekends, right?
Yeah.
And see if he takes any midweeks. I think Georgia's out. I think Bama's out, obviously. A&M could use a recruiting win. Florida could use a recruiting win. I guess Tennessee is trying to get in on this now.
I've heard a little bit about that, yeah.
As is Florida State. It's going to be fascinating here. Well, I guess we'll see what goes down in the next 14 days.
Yeah, it should be incredibly entertaining. But we appreciate your insight on all of this. We think you do a great job. Where can we find you? I know Banner Society is kind of a thing that a lot of folks have talked a lot about. If people want to read more of the work that you're doing online, where can they find that?
Sure. The best place for me is just, I assume everybody listening to the show probably has Twitter. Just follow me on Twitter, at Bud Elliott. That's 2 L's, 2 T's, and the number 3, at Bud Elliott 3. And anytime I put an article out or a newsletter out, I also tweet it. So if you kind of want the Bud feed, it's right there.
Bud, we appreciate your time. Thanks for your insight. We'll look forward to getting a chance to speak to you soon.
All right, guys. Take care.
Good stuff there from Bud Elliott, Banner Society, longtime kind of guy covering Tomahawk Nation with Florida State. Wanted to get his thoughts on Trey McKitty, but we'll certainly sort of dovetail into a little recruiting talk when he's there as well. And I do think it's one thing that's kind of interesting is that what Bud said about the scenario with a guy like Evans on someone's roster is almost identical to what John Stinchcomb said a couple of weeks ago when it first became apparent that Georgia, you know, probably either didn't turn in the letter of intent or let him out of his letter of intent or whatever, you know, when he put the official language being on that obviously a roster is made up of a lot of guys, 85 guys on scholarship, more guys in the locker room even than that. And you've got to keep your balance and your ratio of guys you know who are kind of swimming in the right direction compared to guys who are super, super talented but maybe need a little help in swimming in the right direction, that you can't have that tipping point go too far one side because it has a tendency to influence other guys in a locker room, that you have to sort of be careful and think about your locker room makeup. And I said this before. And that it's easy for someone like me who follows recruiting on the basis of five-star this and very highly rated four-star that to treat all of this like it's fantasy football. And you put talented guy with talented guy with talented guy, and suddenly you've got the perfect mix. But chemistry does matter. I think chemistry matters in all sports. I think football, by the degree to which it is truly a team sport, you know, linemen blocking for running backs, receivers catching from quarterbacks, quarterbacks throwing to receivers, you know, everyone needs someone else's help. Chemistry may matter more in football than it really does anything else. So that's probably something worth keeping in mind. As I said before, I'm just sort of willing to let it play out how it plays out. But in terms of the ultimate decision here by a school like UGA, the impact of any player, be it Evans or somebody else, on the chemistry of that program is going to really matter. Before we move on, let me remind you about one thing. My friends at Marlowe's, what a great time it is to be at a Marlowe's. You know, chef-inspired food is one of the things that has made Marlowe's famous. And what that really means is that when you stop by the tavern right there in your neighborhood, one of the things you're going to have, whether it be for a lunch or a dinner or just a cocktail, happy hour, whatever else, is really special care taken to, you know, harvest ingredients and put them together for a meal that's going to be memorable, or a cocktail that you're going to really enjoy sharing with friends. It's the kind of thing that's made Marlowe's Tavern famous. It's the reason why I keep going back over and over and over again. I love the burger. I love the wings. I love the shrimp and grits. I love a lot of those kind of sort of special things. And also unique menu items on various taverns from time to time. It's always a fun thing to kind of find out what's new, what's going on, what new cocktail they've just concocted. It's always a great experience. So check out the Marlowe's Tavern close to you. Find one in your neighborhood. And I think the friends, the family, whomever else you take there with you, I think you'll be in for a very, very special, enjoyable evening. It's always fun. Talk about our friends at Marlowe's Tavern.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
So I think really interesting insight from Bud Elliott there. First of all, pretty detailed breakdown from him on what Georgia can get from Trey McKitty. Also really interesting to hear, I think, pretty favorable assessment of what Jamie Newman brings to the table. This is a guy that those that watched him saw something that they liked. And there's always going to be this, like, huge separation between, you know, non-Georgia fan who says, oh, look at UGA. They've you know, brought in Wake Forest quarterback. They think he's going to be good here, compared to the sort of sometimes deep within the bubble of Dog Nation person who sort of talked themselves into Newman being a Heisman candidate. You know, you just sort of have the two extremes that show up in a college football conversation like this. But it is fair to point out that Newman had fans for himself far before he ever made the decision to come to Georgia. People who saw him at Wake Forest saw a guy with a pretty impressive skill set. Not every game perfect, not every throw perfect, not every stat and stat line for individual games. They weren't all sterling. We certainly acknowledge that if they were, he'd probably already be in the NFL right now. But there were a lot of people who saw a lot they liked about Newman, and apparently Bud Elliott from Banner Society and a longtime follower of the sport was one of those guys. Thanks to Bud for being on the show today. By the way, as we go cruise around the SEC, courtesy of my friends at Royal Caribbean, let me tell you one of the things about Royal Caribbean right now that I think is the most fun. It's Perfect Day Coke OK, and if you're watching a video, you obviously see an example of this. And if you're radio podcast, you have to use your imagination. But you kind of know that, like, there's really no one-size-fits-all vacation. You know, some people like exciting, thrill-seeking things. Some people like relaxed, kind of chill-out things. Well, that's what Perfect Day at Coco Cay can provide, and that's only available through Royal Caribbean. It's 16 amazing Royal Caribbean ships that sail there to Perfect Day Coco Cay. It's an exclusive destination right there in the Bahamas. Half the island's like a thrill side with, like, helium balloon and slides and zip lines and all that kind of stuff. The other half is like a chill side with, like, cabanas right there in the water, and you probably can guess I'm a little bit more of the chill side than the thrill side, but my kids, you better believe they love all the thrill side stuff. Whichever side you find yourself interested in, Perfect Day Coco Cay's got it for you. Royal Caribbean's the only way you can get there, so contact your travel advisor or reach out to my friends at the Cruise and Vacation Authority to book your own and have them help book your own Royal Caribbean cruise. You can call them at 800-326-4971. That's 800-326-4971. Please tell them you heard about them on Dog Nation Daily. It's our friends at the Cruise and Vacation Authority setting you up to be enjoying a perfect day at Coco Cay with Royal Caribbean. All right, a couple of SCC through stories as we go cruise around the SCC. So Najee Harris is coming back to Alabama for the upcoming season. And Nick Saban was, I guess, quoted, I think it was at the Senior Bowl down in Mobile, kind of talking about, you know, Harris' decision to return. And Saban kind of put this in the direction of, as we kind of assume, that maybe that draft grade wasn't quite as favorable for Harris as he would have liked, because of anybody that you could have assumed, and we really haven't done a lot yet on Travis Etienne coming back to Clemson because it hasn't been that relevant for us, but that was kind of a surprise running back coming back. This may be even more surprising from the standpoint of, there's just kind of always been this kind of rumbling that Harris wasn't happy at Alabama. There was even this big San Francisco Chronicle story. I think that was, what, like summer 2018, after his first year at Alabama, the San Francisco Chronicle quoted Harris during the offseason kind of complaining about the situation there in Tuscaloosa. So if anybody seemed like he was kind of a short-term college player, Harris would have kind of been that guy, but he is coming back to Alabama. Now, off the air, our buddy Connor Riley's kind of touted Harris to potentially have a big season. And when we were kind of talking about this, I think it was yesterday, you know, my somewhat, I guess, snarky, but I mean this mostly serious question back is, does Alabama still know how to use a running back? Because over the last couple of years, the notion of Alabama being this big destination for backs, that has kind of gone away. Alabama was not very effective running the football last year, and you may blame that on some of the backs themselves, Harris included, but I sort of wonder if this is just a personality that doesn't exist with this program anymore. 2015 and Derrick Henry winning a Heisman Trophy suddenly seems like a pretty long time ago. So this is relevant for Georgia fans because Georgia obviously goes there in September, and that's a huge high-profile game where returning seniors are going to play a big role in that with a bunch of newcomers on both sides of the ball for both teams. How much does Georgia have to fear with Harris? I think it'll be worth paying close attention to. A couple other things to get to. There was a weird story coming out of South Carolina, and I'll probably butcher part of this, but maybe I'll put a link to this when we post the show at theworldfamousdognation.com. So Deion's son, Shiloh, is a defensive back there for the South Carolina football program and has also expressed his desire to play baseball. And they went to a baseball tryout, and the state, which is the big news entity there in Columbia, South Carolina, reported that one of the South Carolina coaches has said that Shiloh's going to focus on football for right now. And then Deion Sanders kind of fired back on Twitter, basically saying they only gave him 30 swings and he has video of the entire thing. And the line from Deion that kind of was like kind of a wow thing was, he was like, something along the lines of, you know, don't call it a homicide when it was, don't call it a suicide when it was a homicide, or something along those lines, essentially saying that South Carolina didn't give his son a chance to play baseball. This is all kind of weird, and probably the downside of kind of a high-profile dad associated with your team, of when that guy chooses to take to social media, can kind of turn a small thing into a big thing. I think it's just really, really hard to play baseball and SEC-level football, especially at a program that's going to ask a lot from you. That's just not an easy thing to be able to do. I think Deion, back in my day growing up, made the football-baseball thing look a lot easier than it really is. So I just think it's hard to do that. Now, they did say some nice things about Shiloh as a player, said he had a good swing and stuff like that, but I guess you can kind of read in between the lines what might be going on there. I think trying to do dual sport double duty is just not an easy thing to do. Some guys do it, but most guys are not going to be able to, and in some cases maybe even the son of a guy who once made that sort of two-sport thing a little bit famous. One more thing to get to here. Zach Arnett has been named Mississippi State defensive coordinator, spent some time recently at San Diego State. And this is one of those things where, like, this is a name to know in circle, because I'm a big believer that Mike Leach is a media darling. Twitter just loves him. But you can add this to the list of things that Twitter is flat wrong about. That Leach, I believe, is going to be a disaster in the SEC. And while I sort of welcome the idea of Georgia throwing the ball a little bit more, I think someone throwing the ball as much as Leach is going to try to in the SEC is ultimately going to put too much pressure on a defense. And Arnett is going to be one of those names of, when you think about coaches getting beaten up in message boards, this is going to start sooner rather than later, because it's just going to be really hard to put a defense together compared to one of these true air raid styles that really does not have a lot of, you know, room for running the football at all. I think this is going to be a disaster. I think that Leach is going to try to joke about it and, you know, be kind of the goofball. I know he's had kind of a funny tweet again this week, you know, just, you know, typical unorthodox and eccentric type stuff from him. That's all fun and games until the first loss. And once those losses start piling up, and once this kind of stuff looks like the exact antithesis of the rest of the SEC, those folks in Starkville are not going to be happy about that. And I think this this defensive coordinator hire is going to be one of those guys that's really in the crosshairs, trying to build a defense, run an offense that's just not made for that kind of stuff. So we'll follow it, see where it goes. But for now, we'll make that cruising around the SEC, courtesy of Royal Caribbean. All right, here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Meriwether & Tharp, let me get back to the subject with UGA here just for a moment, because it's kind of funny that Bud Elliott a moment ago kind of veered into a direction we were kind of in off the top of the program, or at least I addressed off the top of the program, and then we heard Brock Vandegrift speak about this too a moment ago, the notion of how much is the Georgia offense going to change? How different will it look under Todd Monken than it has before? And obviously, you just heard me kind of, you know, rip on what I think Mike Leach does offensively. That's not what I want to see Georgia become. As a fan of UGA, someone who wants the best for the team, I don't want to see them throw the ball on every down. I still want to see them, hopefully, run the ball more than 50% of the time. Doesn't necessarily have to be 65% of the time, but more than 50% of the time. That's what I hope it looks like, because that means you're winning a lot of games, probably. But within all of that, I do believe that the offense is going to, I think, have to change some. I think it needs to change some. It was interesting to hear Brock Vandegrift a moment ago saying, no, I kind of feel like, you know, Georgia's still going to be Georgia. I think he actually may end up being pleasantly surprised by the time he gets to UGA in 2021, whether Todd Monken's still here or not. In other words, maybe he does, you know, well this season and kind of moves back into a trajectory that leads him towards being a head coach again or an NFL play caller again, something along those lines. I think Vandegrift may actually end up being pleasantly surprised with what the Georgia offense actually looks like by the time he gets here on campus in 2021. This also kind of dovetails, interestingly, into a piece that Mike Griffith has up at DogNation.com today, going back to some of the things that Mark Richt said National Championship Week. Now, at this time, Todd Monken had not yet been hired at UGA, so fair to point that out. But Richt kind of gave his thoughts about, you know, why it was that Jamie Newman initially chose Georgia and kind of the fit here for him. And much the same way we'll talk about the offense that Brock Vandegrift will eventually inherit, you know, the offense that Newman steps into this year, I think, is also a relevant discussion as well. Let me show you the quote here from Mark Richt on that topic of why he's coming to UGA. And by the way, you can read the full story at DogNation.com. Richt says he can adapt to any system. He says, I think he's making the move to Georgia to try to get more experience in a pro-like system. Now, that's Richt before the hire of Todd Monken. And I think that what Richt says there is still, to a degree, going to be true. But, and this is one of the reasons why the story, I think, is pretty interesting, is that Richt also kind of goes into detail about how what the actual pro-style systems are of today is a little bit different than the NFL maybe you and I grew up with. It's actually an NFL that looks a whole lot more like what you see in college, which actually looks a whole lot more what you used to see in high school, that you do kind of see kind of a blend of all this kind of stuff working and leading to success in the NFL. And so for Newman this year, for Brock Vandegrift next year, I'm actually of the belief that you're going to see more change over what this Georgia offense is going to be like the next couple of years. I think that's a change for the better, but it will be interesting to see just how true that ends up being. So we'll obviously keep following all of that. I think that spring practice this year is going to be really, really interesting. I just think it's going to be fascinating. And we won't get too much of a glimpse of this one way or another because, you know, for the most part, you know, G-Day scrimmage is not going to be, you know, super, super intense. And Georgia's been pretty pass-happy in G-Day the last couple of years anyway. So it'll be difficult to tell that. But maybe, you know, for those brief glimpses we get of practice, things like that, maybe we'll see slightly different kind of drill or, you know, something along those lines that sort of gives you an idea of what Monken's going to look like in comparison to what other offensive coordinators have looked like at UGA. One way or another, I think those first few games of the upcoming season, maybe Georgia springing some surprises under Virginia, even Alabama in September. Fun times to be following UGA for sure. Also fun to be able to remind you, 1,181 days. That's how long it's been since those lousy, stinking Gators have beaten UGA. We'll see you tomorrow, Dog Nation Daily, presented by Meriwether & Tharp.